afternoon. Hey, everybody. Wrangle. It's me, Sue B., your on-air personality, and I'm here today with a very special Talk on the Rock. And so we appreciate you listening. In the studio with me today is Larry Persily, who is celebrating a milestone. Now, I was trying to figure out...
At our age, they're all milestones.
They're all milestones, and we're just glad for every one of them, aren't we?
Yes.
Now, I was trying to figure out, so on June 2nd, 1976, is that the day you wrote the check for the Wrangell Sentinel, or that you became the
No, that was our first issue. We actually got here probably a week before that when we moved from Chicago. We got here late May.
So you and Leslie, your wife. Yeah. So that's what I wanted to ask about. So you guys are in Chicago.
Right.
And you had taken a vacation to Wrangell?
We were reading a trade magazine one night back in, I think it was April, late March, waiting for the pizza. And was just reading the want ads. Back then, magazines and newspapers actually had want ads.
Right.
And it said, newspaper for sale in Alaska. And I thought, well, don't see that every day. Neither of us had ever thought about it. Again, we were sort of killing some time waiting for pizza, and I figured out the time zone difference. I thought, hell, it's late here, but it's dinner time in Alaska.
Yeah.
So I called. And back then, I don't know what it was, 45 cents a minute or something. It's pretty expensive.
Right.
So I called the number in the ad, and a woman answered, and I said, is Jamie Bryson there at the Sentinel? And she said, well, they're closed now. Because back then, after 5 o'clock, when the switchboard closed at the phone company, all of the incoming outgoing calls were transferred to Francis, who ran the switchboard at the Thunderbird Hotel.
Oh, my gosh.
So Francis answered, said, no, they're closed now. I said, well, we figured it out. I said, can you switch me to his home? Oh, no, he's not there. He's over at so-and-so's for dinner tonight. Because Francis knew. So Francis switched me through to where they're having dinner. I interrupted the dinner, talked to Jamie a little bit. We thought some more and decided, well, maybe this is a good idea. So we booked a very short trip to Wrangell, like maybe 2 nights in Wrangell, maybe 1 night. Because back then you had to certainly change planes.
Right.
This is before the jets, so you have to change in Ketchikan the way back. It was an ordeal to get from Chicago to Wrangell. Came, and I remember Jamie picked us up at the airport, drove us to downtown, but we didn't know what to expect. So he pulls in the front of the storefront, and I said, well, where's downtown? And he said, this is it.
This is downtown.
Right. Front Street wasn't paved back in 76.
Oh, my gosh.
So anyway, we spent a couple days in Wrangell, decided to buy it. I don't know, maybe a week later we signed the contracts and wrote the check and then moved end of May. Went back to Chicago, quit our jobs, arranged for movers, shipped a car, got married, packed, did the whole thing in 5 weeks and got back.
That really is amazing. Did you have a background in journalism? Is that why you were looking for?
Yeah, we both were working for the same newspaper in Chicago.
Okay.
And, I was 4 years out of college. Leslie was 5 years out of college.
Okay.
But yeah, we had both done journalism.
Journalism. Yeah. So it is one thing to move from doing journalism to buying a newspaper.
Well, you know, when you're young, you don't think through things particularly. So one thing we didn't think through, we pooled our money and said, oh, we can afford the down payment. We can afford the plane ticket and we can afford the Allied van lines for the moving and shipping the car. What we didn't figure out is when you take over a business on June 1, you have expenses instantly.
Right.
Rent, phone, food. But you don't have any income until you've run the business for June, sent out your bills July, so you start having cash flow in July and August. So that first month, we were sort of broke.
Slim. Skinny, yeah.
Right, and I remember back then we would sell newspapers through vending machines in front of Angerman's, at the ferry terminal, at the airport, at the Stikine, at the Thunderbird, and elsewhere. We'd go and empty out
the
quarters.
Coins.
From the machines, it's like, okay, well, this will get us by for food this week. And then things caught up and we paid bills. So, yeah, there were some things we didn't think about.
Wow. Well, and that's when you make any big move like that. But So was there culture shock from going to, from Chicago to Wrangell?
Oh, I suppose, but we were so busy. I guess we didn't notice it. I mean, the paper we worked for the first, I don't know, first several years, we worked 7 days and slept 6 nights. The production night, we never slept.
Yeah.
So I suppose it was culture shock. And, well, I remember that often we would drink Milkman, that powdered milk.
Yes.
Because you go to the store and the barge hasn't gotten in. Anyway, right. There wasn't fresh milk.
Right.
And it was a lot cheaper. So we, it was a culture thing, started drinking Milkman. And I'm a big milk drinker. And someone told us it's a lot better if you just put a couple drops of vanilla into it.
Oh.
And we did that and it made it much better.
Huh.
So, sure, culture shock of Milkman, culture shock of different things that you were used to eating weren't in the stores, but
pizza.
Yeah, there was no pizza, though. After a while, the Snack Shack, which is now Wolfpack, started making pizza.
Okay.
And then later the Marine Bar, and then there was also another pizza place there, but we weren't going out much anyhow.
I think
we went out to dinner once that first year, and I forget where we went, and then pretty much didn't go out to dinner to the bars again for 7-8 years till we
sold. So this was a real commitment. This was this was a learning curve and a commitment.
Right, and we knew the production end of it. We knew the photography. We knew writing. We had to learn the business end of it.
Yeah.
We had to learn what the town cared about and what people want covered.
Right. Right. And in that physical production of the paper, was it still in those days where you had to ship it off island to get it printed?
Right. The Wrangell hadn't had a printing press in decades, a couple decades at that point. So we would, back then, it wasn't electronic. You would print out the galleys or the headlines and photos and such, and then use hot wax to stick the headlines
onto a template.
Onto the pages, and then we would send out those flat pages to the printer in Ketchikan where they would print it and send. And so we printed in Ketchikan at first, had some problems, so then we switched printing to Juneau.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, so we were dependent on the plane getting out one day and then coming back the next. The ferry was kind of a backup, but the jets were best if they flew.
Yeah, yeah. So across these 50 years, you have at times sold the paper and then bought it back.
Mm-hmm.
So this is your third time at being the helm since 21?
I took it over January 1, 2021.
Okay, okay. So there's something that compels you about this little local newspaper. What is it that keeps you coming back to this little local paper?
I don't know, punishment. I think local newspapers for small communities are really important. You know, there's all the garbage, and it's radio, so I won't use another word, but there's all the garbage on social media, but it's not necessarily accurate.
Mm-hmm.
It's so I think particularly in small towns, you can find out what's going around the world by looking at your phone, but you're not really going to find out that much about Wrangell. So
mm-hmm.
small towns are important. The economics are wretched, miserable, terrible, but I think it's important that the town have it. I certainly still have an affinity and affection for Wrangell, even though it's changed over the years, not just economically, losing the sawmills. Wrangell always was a little cranky. It's gotten a little crankier in its own sweet way. But I guess I thought we do everything. Well, I shouldn't say everything. We often do things in life because we think we can make a difference.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, well, maybe if I buy it back, the third time will be the charm. I would like to. I'm 75. I don't want to keep doing the 7 day a week work.
Yeah.
So I'd like to find someone who is a little bit younger. Doesn't have to be 21, but somewhere between there and 75. I'd give it to him, but right now it loses money. You can't give away a business. It loses money.
Yeah.
Got to figure out how to get the Sentinel to a point where it can pay its own way, then turn it over to someone younger who would live here. I don't believe in absentee ownership in the sense of you got to know the town you're writing about.
Yeah, yeah. Which makes it interesting. I know that You're currently based out of Anchorage.
Yeah, Anchorage and Juneau. Yeah.
And Juneau, right, because you go to the legislature and you cover what's happening there. But you cover a lot of local events here in Wrangell, assembly meetings and, you know.
Well, like I was just talking to Kim Lane, the borough clerk, who's excellent, by the way, if her assembly members are listening and want to do an evaluation, because there's a couple assembly meetings next week, but they're available on Zoom.
Uh-huh.
And that's a big change. You know, years ago, if you weren't in town, you could not listen to the borough assembly or school board, but now with Zoom. And because I know the issues and know the people, when I need to, I can cover a Wrangell story from Juneau or Anchorage or wherever I happen to be.
Sure.
To supplement what our local staff is doing.
Sure. So that leads me to how do you determine what stories to cover in a particular week? How do you choose the stories, or do the stories choose themselves sometimes?
Sometimes they choose themselves. Sometimes it's so obvious. So Boom Chain,
yes,
Lukes, who graduated high school but finishing off his career at the state track meet this weekend, took first place in three races, outstanding runner or whatever it's called, outstanding male athlete award. Those are obvious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No question about it. The fact we have a story in the paper tomorrow, because the museum is converting to a new online database, so anybody can sit at home and look up what's in the museum collection that's not on display but is in storage. Some seem obvious. Others, someone will stop in or call and say, did you know, or had you heard, whether it's a new business, whether it's the new school superintendent, or certainly with elections coming up in the fall. So some are obvious, others are just, as you walk around town looking and observing, that's different.
Yes.
That wasn't here before. What's changed? And you can't do them all. So,
And
sometimes, you know, I do look online. We have some stupid website I can go to that tells me how many people click on different stories.
Oh, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Well, gee, no surprise. The Boom Chain takes first in the state. A lot of people read.
Sure.
The in-depth analysis of the borough budget, nobody reads. So I try to balance how am I going to put this? So in news, I think it's always trying to balance what people want to know, what's popular, but also what people should know if they want to
or
put
need
forth
to know. Yeah.
You should know the budget. You should know how much the borough has in savings. You should know how the money's spent. The fact that you don't read it as much, well, I guess, sorry, I'm still going to write them. But certainly, whereas I'm fully capable of writing 3,000 words on the budget, I know after 500 words, the eyes glaze over. So you adapt what you're writing to what you think is the, I don't want to say attention span, because that's a term you use for little kids, the interest of readers.
Yeah.
If you want 500 words, I can boil it down to 500 words.
Well, and so, and that need to know, I mean, often is condensed.
Yeah.
I mean, they need to know the highlights.
Right.
And it becomes a resource then, right? If they want more information, there are places to go get that.
Right. And just because I'm fascinated with budgets and numbers and fiscal matters doesn't mean the world is. So I think, and it's not just for the Wrangell Sentinel, any reporter has got to know their audience. You're writing for your audience. You're not writing for yourself. You're not writing for your friends.
Right. So has there been a story across the years that just really stuck with you?
Couple. This was, I want to say, early 80s. Late at night, people heard a plane overhead.
Mm-hmm.
Not a jet, but a prop plane. So flying around, and people wondered, what the heck is that? There's no flights around that midnight or whatever it was. So I started calling the next day. It turned out it was a man who was flying at night nonstop from Whitehorse to Rupert with extended fuel tanks so he could make the run. The weather was bad, But like many ding-dongs who think they can beat the weather, he thought, well, there's kind of an opening here. I can take off from Whitehorse and get to Rupert before the weather socks in again. Well, he got lost, of course. This is, you know, before GPS.
Right, right.
And he's flying around in the bad weather, clicking his microphone. Because on the planes, if you click the mic, that's what will, on the right frequency, that will activate runway lights to light up.
Right.
Because he knew he was
starting. In rural places,
right.
Yes.
He thought he was over Metlakatla.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, he wasn't, as we know. He was west of Wrangell, or as I later found out. So he's clicking, and he sees parallel lights. And he figures, oh, this is Metlakatla. I'm coming down to land. He comes out of the clouds, gets low enough, and realizes it was not parallel lights on the Metlakatla runway. It was a cruise ship.
Oh.
Well, he did not try to land on the cruise ship. He pulled up.
He did pull up, okay.
Starts calling on the radio. The cruise ship couldn't hear him, and the Coast Guard couldn't hear him, but I think it was a Delta Airlines flight between Seattle and Alaska heard him.
Wow.
So they started circling above him so they could hear his signal, relay it to the Coast Guard, and relay it to the cruise ship. And then I think Delta had to leave. Maybe they had fuel issues, and I think it was an Alaska plane that took its place. And the pilot on the jet, and this guy knew he was starting to run out of gas because every time he'd bank, it would sputter.
Oh.
So the pilot on the jet talked the guy how to land in the water, how to count the waves, look for the crest. The cruise ship had put a lifeboat down the side, so they were ready to retrieve him, and the jet pilot talked him into landing on the water. The guy got out. The cruise ship picked him up. His plane sank, and the cruise ship took him to, I think, Ketchikan, which was the next stop. And I waited a day and called his home. This is back when you could get phone numbers from authorities as opposed to now. I called, and I think it was his mother who answered. Said, oh, is Bill there or whatever the name is? Because I figured it had been a day, Ketchikan. She said, no, he called me, and he said I should pick him up at the airport this afternoon. What do you want to talk to him for? Because I told her I was from a newspaper.
Right.
I said, hasn't he told you? Mm-hmm. She said, no, what hasn't he told me? Apparently she owned the plane, I think.
Oh, my gosh.
So that was one I remember.
But that is such a classic Alaskan story that everybody contributes. You know, everybody's got a way of making sure that eventually you're safe.
Right. No, everyone worked together. Yeah. The Alaska Airlines, Delta Airlines, Coast Guard, the cruise ship. He lost the plane.
Yeah.
I always wondered, what was he doing in a plane with extended fuel tanks flying from one Canadian port to another? Well, certainly he didn't want to land in Alaska and deal with customs.
Right.
You know, if you were writing a novel, you would say he was running drugs.
Mm.
But I don't know that. I think the other story that comes to mind, this is in the early 80s, when the sawmill was owned by a Japanese venture, had been since the beginning, and times were just not good.
Mm.
You know, timber industry was starting to falter. Economics were bad. And there was a little tiny story that I forget if I read in the Wall Street Journal or Seattle paper, little paragraph that said that the Japanese companies, the investors behind Alaska Lumber and Pulp, were not going to subsidize it anymore. They were done writing the checks. This thing was going to have to stand on its own.
So this was a little blip in another paper.
Right.
Yeah.
Just a business story.
Yeah.
Whatever is Marubeni, Mitsubishi, whatever, were not going to cover the losses anymore for this small, because small, big for Alaska, big for Wrangell, but small in terms of international trade. And I thought, we got to get the story. This is so important to the town, but I can't report it. No one's going to talk to me. So I tracked down the Associated Press reporter in Tokyo who wrote the original piece by making phone calls. Anyway, got a hold of him and explained my situation. I'd love for you to freelance the story because you have contacts that I don't have and people would need to know. And he explained that He'd have to ask his boss if he could freelance. And the boss said, okay, sure. It's not competing with the Associated Press.
Yeah.
But he said if he writes under his real name, everyone at the company offices will know who he is and they'll stop talking to him.
Ah.
So he asked if we were comfortable if he used his wife's maiden name as a pseudonym. Fine with me.
Sure.
This is before email.
Right.
Before fax, anything. So I think it was every Saturday night he would call us at the Sentinel. Maybe it was Friday night. And I would take dictation from this guy in Tokyo.
Oh, my gosh.
And we were running these stories that no one else had and that the company officials were, I'm told, how did you get that? How do you? They were accurate.
Yes.
They just had preferred they not end up in print. They were expensive phone calls.
Yeah,
call
right.
and collect from Tokyo.
Right.
But good reception.
Ah.
So I guess those two I feel...
Yeah.
I remember and I feel particularly proud of.
Well, see, and that's what I was thinking about in the weekly function of a newspaper,
mm-hmm.
that it's so ephemeral. I mean, you do all of this work, you get all of this reporting and pictures and everybody's frantically writing and making deadlines and all of that. And you send it off to the printer and that's done. And you have to start over the very next week.
Right. It is... many frustrating things. Mm. Certainly, the economics are one. But as soon as you finish one, you start the other. There's no downtime.
Yeah,
there really isn't.
Yeah, and so it takes a particular set of personal values to embrace that, and a particular kind of persistence to.
Right. I can tell you what I'm going to be doing at 4 o'clock on Monday. Forever. I mean, that's when we proofread pages.
Yeah.
Or Tuesday at 5 o'clock when the jet leaves, we're going to be putting labels on and stuffing papers. I can tell you Wednesday morning what I'm going to be doing. It's if you like routines and schedules and predictability, it's great.
Sure.
If you'd like a little freedom once in a while to say, I'm going to sleep in late, well, this ain't it.
And so... I mean, there is just a very particular drive to doing that and a commitment to doing that. I mean, Wrangell has been very fortunate to have that drive and that commitment in you.
Well, would hope so. I'm sure, one problem, not just the Wrangell Sentinel, but all newspapers have, is our readership is aging. The generation who would say, I remember when I... was inducted into the Oaks, and this would have been, whatever it was, 48 years ago.
Yeah.
Mr. Fisher, who was the pharmacist in town, and ran Wrangell Drug, pulled me aside and he said, "Everyone knows in town what happens every day, but we wait for the paper to tell us the facts and what really happened, not what we heard."
Mm.
So.
That's very powerful.
Yeah, but the problem now is, of course, and this is not to belittle anybody who's less younger than 70, is people get all their news from a different mechanism,
mm-hmm.
and newspapers have to figure out how we can get people in their 20s and 30s and 40s to read us, whether in print or online, because the Sentinel's online too. You can buy an online subscription.
Right.
But we need to figure out how to get that generation to be news consumers, because otherwise, no offense to you or me or our colleagues, as we die, there's no newspapers left. And it's not just Wrangell. The Frontiersman in the Matt Nusitna Borough, 80 years
mm-hmm.
gone
yeah.
last week.
Yeah.
The Kodiak Daily Mirror is having problems. There are several papers in Alaska losing money because we're losing readers, we're losing advertisers. It's not political. It's mostly just society's changed.
Right.
We got to figure out either we change with it or life will go on without newspapers.
Yeah.
There's no question. I think it'll be it won't be good, but life will go on. I don't think I'm some religious icon that the world can't live without.
No, but I have noticed that, and I know that you've had some community meetings, that you are putting more online.
Trying to.
And that you're, you know, talking about what it would be to transition into electronic media rather than an actual print newspaper.
Right, which is hard because I like print.
Yeah.
I started on a printing press 60 years ago. I like it, but that's not how people get their news anymore.
Right.
It's very expensive to print. It's expensive to fly it into town. It's... Though I will say Alaska Airlines is great about getting those boxes of papers onto the jet. It's expensive to mail it back out. The future is not in print. It just isn't. But whether we can transition into a business plan that pays its own way before all the publishers run out of money, I don't know.
It is an interesting question because there is, you know, the death of a print book has been predicted time and time again, you know, and bookstores, they're going to die. Well, they're flourishing and people are buying books. So there's something about the printed word that still matters.
Right. But do you have enough people to make the economics work?
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know. At the peak of the newspaper, what was your subscription rate like?
Oh, I got to think about that. So I think of press run because we print copies for subscribers, sell at the store, mail out of town, a few leftovers. I think at the height we were printing 1,400 Sentinels a week, and now we're printing 700.
That's still a robust number, but it's still not economically.
No, the math doesn't work. I was editor of the Juneau Empire in the 90s, and I think, at one point, we're printing, we had 7,000 subscribers. Now it's 1,000, 1,500. Yeah, it's not just us.
Right. It is true that newspapers across the United States. And so that's what, you know, again, my thanks that you've continued to be committed to it.
Well, thank you. Who is it, the guy who rolled the rock up the hill, Sisyphus?
Sisyphus, yeah.
Yeah, right. Should have applied for that job. Probably paid better. At least I would have gotten exercise rolling the rock.
There you go. Yeah. So, but to mark this that June 2nd first issue under your leadership, there is a reception tomorrow at the Wrangell Sentinel.
Yes, small office, but hopefully we can spill on the sidewalk if the weather's still good.
Absolutely. So tomorrow from 4 to 5 o'clock.
Right. We'll have pecan cookie bars and some sort of chocolate chip bar, I'm told. You can tell I'm not in charge of the cooking or acquisition.
But it is there for people to stop by and to say how much they've appreciated the history of the paper, always, their feedback.
Right, or they can stop by and say, gee, Larry, I can't stand your opinion columns. They can do that too.
And they have.
Yeah, not as much. Wrangell is not a letter-writing town, I will tell you that.
Haines, the letters to the editor.
Chilkat Valley News in Haines gets 5, 6, 7 letters to the week, all with strong opinions.
Huh.
Wrangell is not that expressive, demonstrative. Not that people in town don't have strong opinions.
Yeah.
They just don't write letters that much.
That's really interesting, because I know you've encouraged that as a practice.
But Haines is known for it.
No kidding.
Haines has a lot of personality issues.
Well, every community has its own personality.
Just, Haines airs their divisiveness at a high decibel level.
Interesting. Well, Wrangell might be a little cranky, but we're very grateful for all that you've done.
Well, good-natured cranky.
Yeah. I have one last question.
Sure.
I need to know, this is a question that I've never asked you. Where exactly were you for Game 7 of the 2016 World Series?
Oh, Chicago Cubs. Unfortunately, I was working as chief of staff for the Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor. That day I was in Anchorage, I had to fly back to Kenai.
You did not get to see the game?
So because of the rain delay, I got to see the last out of the game on the TV in the airport waiting room in Kenai. When I got off the plane, literally, that was the moment. The last play.
That's perfect, though.
It is. I would have liked to
have
seen the whole thing,
moment,
but at least it worked.
Well, I had to get in that you have something going on greater than just the newspaper. You do have the life of a Cubs fan.
Yeah, which is sort of like rolling a rock Sisyphus uphill.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say that too. So, yeah. All right. Well, thank you for coming
in,
Larry. And thank you all for listening to this special edition on Talk of the Rock. Coming up next is World Cafe.